Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
It is Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Gola Jr., Jhené Egbuemeke. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Jhené, we get to start off today basking still in the glow of some confetti. Congratulations from us to the Alabama Crimson Tide, your 2021 college football playoff national champions. And Jhené, I was sitting there watching it last night. Jason Fitz and I were working as a part of the Skycast, megacast of all the great ways you could watch the game last night. And Lord, that one got late awfully early right now as Devontae Smith takes home your MVP of the game and looked good doing it for all of the half that he actually had to play.
Actually, tell you the lens. My mother, Ife Ogwumike, who actually is a friend of the show, came on before. I woke up to a text, and she wakes up super early, and it hit me in Los Angeles at, what was it, 2 a.m.? 2 a.m., so her 4 a.m. And she never really follows much. She follows sports, but she never tweets me or texts me about sports. She doesn't tweet at all. And she basically texted me and said, Jhené, Devontae Smith steals the show. That's my input for your show today. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I finally got like a nice little topic bar by my mom. She's so busy like dealing with my little sister in business school and medical school. And that's sort of it. Like, it doesn't matter who you are rooting for or against. Even if college football was your thing or not, like, this is where all the eyeballs were. And who delivered? Not only Alabama and Nick Saban, but more importantly, Devontae Smith in one half of football just sort of burst onto a scene in a way that caught the attention of NFL players who were tweeting him. But also, he caught the attention literally when he hurt his finger. Long story short, this was a moment for Alabama and their dominance. And also, it highlighted the evolution of their team going from that physical upfront defensive team to now a team that can just straight up put points on the board and have talent in versatile ways.
And Jhené, I think that's the all-encompassing look I had of this, is seeing this version of the Alabama dynasty, because it is Alabama and Nick Saban's dynasty. Now, this is factoring in his time at LSU as well, but listen to this. Nick Saban has now won 7 titles in his last 16 seasons as a head coach. The other 129 head coaches in FBS right now, current head coaches, have combined for 6 in that time period. 6 to his 7. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Jhené, I look at this the way we talk about Bill Belichick in the NFL, one of the modern dynasties in pro football, and what him and Tom Brady were able to accomplish. Very similar in the way I look at this Nick Saban Alabama dynasty, because his predecessor, Bear Bryant, the one who he passed for national champions last night, Bear Bryant, the proud owner of 6, Nick Saban now the proud owner of 7. Nick Saban's had to do it in a time and in a landscape where college football has been much more wide open. The traditional powers don't just get to bogart all the TV like Notre Dame and everyone used to back in the day. It's not the same funnel to every place. There should be a lot more reasons for talent and product to even out over the landscape of the sport. And instead, all Nick Saban has done is dominate for the better part of the last decade and a half.
And can you talk to me a little bit more, because you serve as a college football analyst. I love the Skycam, by the way. I tuned in for a few minutes, like 15 minutes, and
Let's
y'all
go.
Held it down with Jason Fitz. The angles were superb, and I wanted more junior on that, but it's okay. We'll send a nice little email to the bosses after this. But can you sort of talk to me a little bit more, especially since you've been in the trenches, you've played against Alabama, and you know this team better than most people even here. You know, it's been fascinating watching the evolution of what this team has really become, because aren't we just a year removed from an LSU offense that everyone was saying, this is the most dynamic in football, set a lot of the benchmarks, we don't know when we'll see that again. And then lo and behold, 365 days or so later, we see another formidable offense coming from the SEC, but this time in Alabama. And I found this nugget: in 13 games against only Power 5 competition, and we're talking about 11 conference games plus ND and Ohio State in the playoff, the average score of this Alabama offense produced 49, and defense at times, 49-19. 49, ooh. Like, it just literally took the top off of everything that we expected, or at least traditionally known from Alabama. So how has this evolved?
Well, Jhené, the fact is it has evolved, right? Like, how it's evolved has been the clear thing to see, from a rushing attack, a team that was going to beat you with all-world defense and a great running game, the Mark Ingrams of the world, even going back to that Derrick Henry offense, the Eddie Lacy team that beat my Notre Dame team back in 2012-13's title game. But the fact that Nick was able to evolve, because, Janae, college football is dominated so much by stubbornness in this spot, right? You go and look at, see, the teams that are in Nick Saban's wake. Les Miles at LSU for so many years tried to beat them the same way Alabama was playing football. And he was given an edict, change, figure out a way to modernize this offense, or we're gone. And he was not able to change, and now he coaches at Kansas. You look at LSU from last year, Chiné, that was a team that from year to year, whether it was the quality of the players there after so many went to the draft, losing their offensive coordinator to the NFL or what, they were not able to sustain that evolution in the same way that Nick Saban's program has, no matter who the coordinators have been during that time period and no matter what the style's been. Like, Nick Saban was the first one trying to complain about these hurry-up, no-huddle offenses way back when, saying they're not good for the sport, they're going to get people injured. And then when they told him they weren't changing the rules, he said, all right, bet. He gave you that Cam Newton towel face on the sideline and said, all right, bet, I'm going to go ahead and run this one back, and I am going to get all of the best guys. So, Chiné, I don't know how we really stop or replicate this, because it's not been a static thing through that time period. And I think that's the greatest testament to what Nick Saban has built here, is the model has changed throughout his time here drastically, and yet they're still able to do whatever they choose to do better than everyone else.
And the one word you just mentioned, the greatest, and I think everyone instantly saw as, well, you said it was early, like early on, we're like, okay, maybe Ohio State can make this kind of interesting sort of, and you have to give, you know, also, you'd have to commend them as well for the effort they put out there, especially Justin Fields, because do you remember when he was like literally on the field and he was trying to like find, he took like about 10 extra seconds.
Oh yeah.
You know when you're tired an athlete and you're down? This happens to me all the time. NECA always comes to me. If I get fouled and the possession stopped and they've blown the whistle, I stay down there until my teammates come. And all my teammates always get scared, like, is she okay? Is she okay? She's like, oh, NECA's like, she's fine. She always just takes a break. That just hit me personally. But you have to commend Ohio State for the season that they've had, and even Ryan Day now going to what, 23-2 as a start to his career from assuming the helm. But when you look at this Nick Saban, you know, evolution and also his legacy already, you hear the word greatest already. And it's funny because it feels like in some regard, especially when it comes to the dynamic people that they're producing in unique ways, it feels like they're just getting started to figuring out what they can potentially do moving out of those traditional norms.
It is. We continue to say just scratching the surface, maybe. I mean, you look at the amount of talent they're able to bring in every year, and Chiné, it almost gives you the ability to do whatever you want when you can recruit at such a high level and bring in whatever piece you need to suit the offense or defense you want to run. And we know most of Nick's bread and butter is on that defensive side of the ball, but offensively, what they've been able to do is staggering, and it's all culminated in this game. And it's one that Paul Feinbaum, who does a great job as a host of the Paul Feinbaum Show on the SEC Network, said on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning, this may have been the masterpiece of Nick Saban's career.
This is his best, without a doubt. And, you know, I'm thinking very hard and very seriously about saying this is the best team I've ever seen. And I say that 1 year removed from saying the LSU team last year looked like the best team I've ever seen. But this team did it under more difficult circumstances. This team played a 10-game SEC schedule. There were no freebies in there. There was no East Montana State to feast off of. And then, you know, they played a championship game against Florida. And then clearly we all know Notre Dame and Ohio State. So I just don't think there's anything that comes close to this. I think the circumstances this year are the most difficult in the history of college football. And as a result, this is Nick Saban's masterpiece. This is a Van Gogh on the canvas. Nothing compares to this.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Now, coming up next, Chiné, I want to ask two very different questions about Alabama's star receivers, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, who we saw out there last night. But I also want to get to the bottom of this. Why is Nick Saban smiling so damn much now? We'll try and figure that out next. It's Chiné and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chiné and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I can think of one person that does, Nick. Might be you. Chiné and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chiné Agwumike. And Chiné, I am curious because we're going to get into not only the legacy of Nick Saban, but a couple of problematic things that a lot of people saw last night in the middle of that win. It was a dominant win for Alabama over Ohio State. Again, Nick Saban's seventh national championship in his last 16 seasons. But before we do that, I have to ask you a question. My parents are in the process of moving right now, and so they're going through and cleaning up a lot of our old rooms. And so we've come across a lot of things from our childhood. Is there any one thing that takes you back? If there's one item that takes you back to elementary school more than anything else, because I think I have the one singular item that is synonymous with elementary school and all of our lives.
Honestly, I would say maybe a backpack. Like if I went back and saw my backpack, maybe that'll take me back.
I can do you one better, Chinee, because a backpack would be great. A pencil case would be great. I found my recorder.
Oh.
Do you remember that? Everyone in the known universe, for some reason, got signed up. We needed some sort of musical element to our education, and so now they decided that us learning songs on the recorder was the way to go. And so now as we welcome in our next guest, Spencer Hall here, SEC Network analyst, part of Thinking Out Loud and the SEC Network with that great crew there and the Shutdown Fullcast, wherever you get your podcast. Spencer, I have to ask, is the worst day of every parent's life the minute their child is handed a recorder?
Clarinet's worse.
Ooh. Okay.
Clarinet's worse. I'm going to get like real, I'll get real granular. Recorder, it's very bad. Clarinet's more expensive, thus there might be an attempt by the parent to say, I need to recoup this investment because I paid some money for this clarinet. A recorder? Nobody's ever paid real money for a recorder.
This is fair. I feel like you should be able to get recorders out of a gumball machine, essentially. So I'm glad we brought in an expert on this because I was concerned at what I was about to do, potentially sending this recorder to one of my many friends with young children. But we can get to that another time on here because, Spencer, we had the culmination of the 2020 college football season last night. Alabama went out and beat the brakes off of Ohio State in that game. And I'm just curious from your perspective, Spencer, have you ever seen Nick Saban smile this much? Because I don't feel like I have.
You know, I sort of think my brain erases it as an error when I see it. Because I know it's happened in the past. I can go look up pictures of Nick Saban smiling. And yet, when I try to recall other times Nick Saban's been happy, my mind just goes, nope, file not found. File not found. So, he smiled a lot last night. That was really weird. But if my team had put that on a really good Ohio State team, you know, if I were a robot, I'd be grinning ear to ear.
Okay, Spencer Hall, SEC Network analyst here with us on Chinee and Golic Jr., and I'm looking at your headshot on ESPN+. Spencer, like, get some of that Saban spirit. You know, you have nice little, like, game face going on, but it's okay, I digress. I want to talk about the offensive MVP when it comes to this last game yesterday in the national championship. Devontae Smith wowed everyone across America in one half of football. Where does he really stack in the conversation of best Alabama receivers?
He is the best Alabama receiver. That is, there's really, like, by the numbers and in terms of impact and awards and pedigree and hype and how scared you are to try to defend him and how bad Tough Borland looked trying to defend him in the open field, which was not Tough Borland's fault. That's all the legacy that Devontae Smith has left at Alabama. And in case you didn't have enough of an eye-popping resume to be considered the best receiver in what is now a long line of really good receivers at Alabama, last night he had 200 yards of offense and 3 TDs in one half of work. That's just insane.
It makes no sense. And Spencer, it really feels like that's the culmination of this shift because, as you mentioned, we've seen this line of receivers that goes back to guys like Julio Jones when this offense was much more run-based. But the full shift we've got now, what stops this Alabama team? Because it seems like Nick Saban can evolve through almost any change college football throws at him right now.
Time. We're all waiting on time. We're all waiting for Nick Saban to eventually decide that he does not want to coach college football. I don't think that's a good thing to wait for, but given the evidence, that's really what we're looking at. They are the best at what they do right now. The person who is in charge, the manager that they pay a tremendous amount of money to get those results, shows no sign of flagging or slowing down. And on top of all that, go look at their recruiting rankings. I don't think the appeal has lessened. I don't think people are just going, well, they don't need me, I'll go somewhere else. nope. Apparently people are just still lining up to go to Nick Saban's home for gifted football mutants. So you're just waiting for Nick Saban and time to catch up with Alabama. Everyone else, including a program like Ohio State, is second place. That is nuts, by the way, that we're able to say, yeah, Ohio State, they lost by like over 20 points last night. That's you saw that team and what they did to Clemson. And then they rolled in and they got killed. That's not an easy thing, by the way. This is a very long answer, but it's one, I want to get to a good quote, which is Najee Harris was asked by an Ohio State reporter, like, how do they make it look so easy last night? And Najee Harris looks at him and goes, they were killing me. That was really hard. It's not like they're just going out there and not trying. You know, it was a great peek into everything they do requires maximum effort. And it may look easy, but those guys are getting tested out there, and they're still doing that well.
Janaan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Spencer Hall, SEC Network analyst and co-host of Thinking Out Loud. And let's stick with something that actually did look hard. And one of the things that was a really jarring and uncomfortable visual last night was Jalen Waddle out there on the field coming back about 85 days removed from a fractured ankle. Spencer, what was he doing out there? Because it didn't look like it was playing football that was at all necessary for him in that physical state.
No, I don't know what he was. Maybe he just, the simplest answer might be the best one, that Jalen Waddle wanted to show that he could still go out there and he still could play. I don't think that was the lasting effect of seeing Jalen Waddle out there, because he did not look 100% and didn't really look 75% either. He looked like somebody who was running on a recently reconstructed ankle, and that is exactly what he was. So I can only assume that that was, I would like to go out there. It's not like Alabama has a problem with depth at wide receiver. That's the one thing that makes me say, the coaches could have said, hey, you got to play. I don't think that was necessarily the case. And in case you doubt that, like, Nick Saban takes special requests for players or value seniority or people who have contributed, last night they put in the center, Dickinson, who had tore up his knee against Clemson, a beloved member of that offensive line. They put him in to take the final snap. So I think there is probably an element of that going on. It was not a great look.
It was a tough visual to see on a night where, again, like you said, Alabama did not struggle with depth or production anywhere across the board. Spencer, we always appreciate you checking in, the time and the insight, man. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Spencer.
All right, thanks, y'all.
Spencer Hall, again, Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network, the Shutdown Fullcast, wherever you get your podcast, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, but let's stick with that, Chiney, because Jalen Waddle was undoubtedly a story last night, and we'll go to reaction from some of his soon-to-be peers in the NFL for what this Alabama team should have done. We'll get to all that after this word from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. When you upgrade your job post, Indeed is going to immediately deliver candidates from their resume database who fit your job criteria. Let Indeed sift through the resumes so you can focus on selecting your top candidates. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined. That's according to Breezy HR 2019. Receive a $75 sponsored job credit when you post a job at Indeed.com/credit. That's Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply. What should have happened with Jalen Waddle last night? Back after this, Janaan Golick Jr.
Janaan Golick Jr., the podcast.
And it's not even like I can be mad, Chiney, because when you look at this Alabama team, and we talk about Nick Saban having fun, the team's right along there with him. Chiney Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Like, did you see Najee Harris's interview after the game?
Yes.
Where they're asking him, how did you make it look so easy? He said, easy. Easy. That was not easy. They were coming after us. That was hard. He's like, no, I get hit a lot, way too much for you to tell me that was easy for you.
Make it look so easy. Y'all did, but yeah, we all know that was super hard.
Yeah, no, it was a little bit tough, but again, the final score does not make it look so. Alabama goes out and dominates Ohio State in the 2021 College Football Playoff National Championship game. And there was all of that, Chiney. There were great moments by great players in that game. Devontae Smith, who already won the Heisman Trophy, went out there and got his 21st touchdown reception on the season, an SEC single season record. Najee Harris at running back got his, I think, 28th all-purpose touchdown for an SEC single season record in this game. All across the board, there were things to be excited about, and then there was the other thing. So this was the difficult one to stomach, because Janae, what we also saw was Alabama star wideout Jalen Waddle, who was injured earlier in the season, fractured his ankle, and had been out roughly 85 days. And we had heard leading up to this game that there was talk that he was back, cleared medically to practice, and was going to be a game-time decision. And Janae, what we saw out there from Jalen Waddle, who had a couple of catches in this game, even picked up a key first down early in that game, every time he jogged back over to the sideline, and you saw him noticeably favoring that ankle. Myself, and we saw there were plenty of pro athletes, guys that will soon be Jalen's peers in the NFL, saying the same thing. Who in the hell let that guy get out on the field?
Patrick Mahomes, Darius Leonard, Dez Bryant, Darius Slayton, A.J. Brown, the list goes on. And I feel like everyone watching was saying that either out loud to their friends as they're watching it or in their head. And while we want to commend him for wanting to be a part of this huge moment for his career, I think the reality was, and I remember, you know, we talked to Sean McDonough going into the game, and he was saying, like, look, like, this is a guy that clearly is out there going through the motions. We don't know until the last minute. And I remember seeing the camera angle. I don't know if you, I'm sure you probably caught it on the sky cam. You had the best view out of all of us. I remember seeing, and I was watching him run up and down. And again, I'm not a doctor, but I have had two major injuries, and hearing the fractured ankle and then seeing him move, like, normally people don't understand, like, when you have an injury, gone are the days of you, like, thinking about just running. Like, before, you could just move and just think about, man, I'm tired. When you have an injury after that, you're starting to think about, okay, am I stepping right, and all that type of stuff, and it just sort of removes the free-flowing motion. Now, this man is so talented, Jalen Waddle, that most people probably can't see it, but everyone saw what it looked like when it was happening and transpiring during the game, and that was absolutely frustrating because, you know, sometimes, and I always say this, and I learned this, and I feel like a lot of people learned it when it came to Kevin Durant, right, going back into the NBA Finals versus Toronto Raptors. Sometimes you just need to protect the athlete from themselves. Now, I am one of those people that, you know, going out there for a snap or two, like, that, to me, you can be in a protected situation, not just, like, sort of going there with reckless abandon, and I don't think Alabama did that at all. But I just think that it was uncomfortable overall. It didn't seem necessary. And at the end of the day, everyone is rooting for him to make that next step when it comes to his career. And, you know, it just was one of those things where, okay, go out there for a few, but it just didn't look right nonetheless.
Yeah, Janae, that was the surprising part to me, was that it wasn't just a few plays. This wasn't isolated, and it wasn't like we didn't see examples elsewhere on the night of how you can handle that within Alabama's own team. Jalen Waddle shouldn't have been out there. I mean, that seemed to me far too labored for that risk. And you and I have both been involved in these conversations, and most often it's, can I injure this any worse? Can I somehow make this worse by going out there? That generally tends to be the line of demarcation with most hurt or injured conversations with athletes in this situation. I don't know what that conversation sounded like there, but I heard there was hardware put in there, plates and screws, which I had that happen. My brother snapped his arm in preseason training camp, plate and screws in that thing. And you can. I mean, you can get fractures around the screws in that spot. It can get worse if it goes on in those situations. But you look no further than what Alabama did the rest of the night, Chiney. Landon Dickerson, starting center for Alabama, who was out this game because he tore his ACL in the SEC championship game, suited up, warmed up, and came out there to take that final kneel-down snap because he wanted to be there with his team. Wasn't going to make it worse, wasn't in a position to compromise himself in that spot, wanted to be a part of it. Devontae Smith was the MVP of that game because of what he did in the first half. And Nick Saban, in the press conference after the game, said Devontae, they couldn't get that dislocated finger after a big hit with Tuff Borland in the second half. They couldn't get that finger back in, and he wanted to come back in and play in the game. This was Nick Saban talking after the post game and said, but we didn't let him go back out there. He wanted to play. We didn't let him go back out there. That's it. That's all you had to do, and that's why I'm so surprised, Janae, that Devontae Smith was not out in the field in that second half, and yet we still saw Jalen Waddle in that uncomfortable visual the entire night.
And let's run game for any athlete that, you know, while we use this platform for good and for positivity, let's run game. Like, when you might hear, and these doctors, obviously I'm not a doctor, but you might hear, like, yeah, it can't get worse. Well, like, don't assume that that's exactly the only outcome, because, you know, a lot of times athletes deal with compensation injuries too. And again, like I say, it's protecting the athlete from themselves. But, like, when I hear that, that's always a red flag. And I just hope that any athlete listening or someone that's playing sports realizing that, like, y'all, like, that not necessarily is always the case. Even though Jalen Waddle, you know, I'm glad that his situation came out where he was able to just get a few and, you know, not really keep it going. It still was a complicated position for everyone watching. And then also now moving forward, everyone's hoping that nothing happens after that.
Janae, I've heard a lot of good things about the Alabama medical staff too. This is not an indictment on them, but this is just the visual that we all faced. And I think that feeling that every athlete had knowing what's on the other side of this game, I can understand like anybody wanting like hell to be able to be a part of this moment with your teammates. You haven't been able to be a part of it. And being injured, you feel like you're on a separate team sometimes having to go through that stuff.
What are you telling?
I mean, you know that feeling as well as anybody. And so to be back and around, it had to feel so great. But we all know what's on the other side. The actual money that you're not making at that level. All of these things that guys work so hard for in that spot that you just want to see preserved and you don't want to see potentially damaged in a game where they didn't need him.
And you talk about plates and screws, and that's when like you have to deal with the real, like, I'm an adult now. You also get your superpowers because you can predict the weather when you get plates and screws and stuff like that.
Fun fact. I was going to say, little known fact for that. Anyone who's had a knee injury or plates and screws, able to predict the weather after that. Very good sense for when low-pressure systems are working their way through. Janae and Golic Jr., brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Someone who's going to need help predicting the future is Adam Silver. Coming up next, we'll try and get into the NBA's latest attempts to do what everyone else is doing and figure out how hard that really is in the middle of a pandemic. We will get to all that after this word from Body Armor.
Start the new year off right by committing to your fitness goals, like Junior is, and so am I, with my VersaClimber out here in LA, and let Body Armor Lite help you achieve them. Body Armor Lite is a low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. It has no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, and only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle. Whatever your goals might be, maybe it's just going down 1% in body fat, maybe it's just trying to get back and doing it every day, working out. Body Armor Lite is keeping you hydrated during your workouts and your busy day. From now until April 30th, buy $20 of Body Armor product and earn $10 in fitness cash to select fitness retailers nationwide. That's more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com. Again, the NBA is coming back down to earth, though, out of the bubble. Our guest gives us updates on how they're handling the COVID situation. Right after this, it's Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Janae Agwumike. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I heard a lot of people last night, Janae, talking about, you know, we made it to the finish line for college football. We made this. I've heard a lot of leagues say that. But I don't know if it's really true in the ways people want it to be. We'll kind of try and unpack what we learned from this year's college football season, because it feels like an exhale right now, but I think the work is only really just beginning. And certainly the NBA has found out about that in a big way, Janae, because all the problems that the NFL, college football have faced have started to find their way into the NBA. We know a lot has been circulating now about some new changes as far as the COVID policies inside the NBA right now from Commissioner Adam Silver. Sean Marks, the Nets general manager, just had to put out a statement about a video of Kyrie Irving that has reportedly surfaced on social media of him at a family gathering during some absence time for him that's been linked to a mental health break for him. And so for more on all of these situations surrounding the National Basketball Association, we head now to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to Brian Windhorst, our ESPN NBA insider. And Brian, I'm curious, as you've seen the added restrictions coming out right now, the rules around the COVID policy for the NBA, what's the conversation been like amongst players reacting to more restrictions on their movement lately?
Obviously, it's not being something they're excited about. It is for 2 weeks. It's not for the rest of the season. I don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks. If you do, let me know. We'll make some arrangements. You know, the thing that's shutting games down right now, I mean, it's not really COVID positive. I mean, that is the root of it. But it's that when a player tests positive, that they've got to shut down 4, 5, 6, 7 of his teammates. And, you know, these teams aren't like baseball teams and aren't like NFL teams that have 16-man practice squads. There are no practice squads. You've got 17 players, and that's assuming everybody's healthy. And so, you know, that's what's shutting this stuff down. And so what they're trying to do is limit how much contact tracing leads to guys getting shut down by keeping them farther apart. And then, you know, the NBA really, really believes in its testing program. I mean, they're testing people twice a day on game days and once on non-game days. And they really do believe that that net will catch most of the virus. But where the infections are coming from, or at least, you know, where they think they can tone it down, is through their friends and family. And really what the heart of that is, guys, is that there are hundreds of players in this league. I do believe it's multiple hundreds who've had this virus over the last 10 months. And they are operating, not all of them, but some of them are operating believing they've got immunity. And that is leading to issues within their families and potentially elsewhere. And so that's something they've just got to tamp down, because it's just something that's causing games to be shut down.
And Brian, you brought up friends and family. And for those listening, Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, also host of the Hoop Collective on ESPN Radio here with us on Chene and Golic Jr. When talking about friends and family, there's an evolving situation happening right now when it comes to the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving. And clearly there's a video that's been circulating on social media of a maskless Kyrie Irving at what appears to be a family birthday party. And we, you know, Jr. led in with the statement from general manager Sean Marks, basically saying Kyrie remains away from the team due to personal reasons, and a date of his return has yet to be finalized. In the meantime, we will continue to stay focused on our organizational goals, and Kyrie will have the opportunity to address his absence when he is ready to do so. How do you what do you take from that situation as it evolves?
Well, there's two things, Janae. There's the situation between the Nets and Kyrie, which the Nets have spent all kinds of different ways twisting themselves into a pretzel by not explaining it. They're basically saying Kyrie will explain it. That's fine. How the Nets and his teammates view his behavior, if indeed this video proves to have been from this last few days, that's an issue for sure. But then there's the issue of Kyrie and the NBA, which is that, you know, there is a protocol in place. That, by the way, protocol has now been suspended, because now they don't want you leaving your house unless it's for an essential trip or an emergency. But, you know, if it was over the weekend, that, you know, you're not allowed to be at a social gathering with over 15 people. And, you know, I can't tell from that video. I wasn't there. I don't know if there were 15 people. But even if there were 14, it's exactly the scenario that the NBA does not want their players in. And they're doing that because they're trying to keep the players safe, his teammates safe, and they're trying to keep the league going. And, you know, just go back to what happened with James Harden in, frankly, a similar situation in some sort of event venue with a lot of people, not without a mask. More than 15 people. James Harden was forced into a week-long quarantine. He was fined $50,000, and he would have lost a game check, which for him was $500,000 had the game been played, but it was postponed. So by the letter of the NBA rule, Kyrie would have to go into quarantine, would be subject to fine or suspension, and would have to forfeit game checks, which for him, I think, are in the $400,000 range while he was in that quarantine. And that's just for breaking the rules. Which everybody knows. And frankly, these rules are negotiated with the players' union. The NBA doesn't just come out with these rules and hand them out and say, these are the rules.
And
Kyrie Irving,
as far
as I know, is a vice president of the players' union. So not only are you disappointed in it as someone, you know, just following the rules, but also as someone who's supposed to be a leader amongst your peers. And so, and again, I don't know when that party was, but it's pretty disappointing.
It is certainly disappointing and complicated in a lot of ways, and we're going to wait to see how that now investigation shakes out with the NBA. Brian, we appreciate the time and the insight, as
Thank
always.
You,
we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Have a good day.
Brian Windhorst, our ESPN NBA insider. And again, check out the Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcasts. And Woj tweeting right now that the NBA is conducting that investigation right now, not the Nets or the Kyrie Irving will dictate his return at this point. So this is in the hands of the league at this point in time, courtesy of our own Adrian Wojnarowski. But coming up next, let's shift gears back into the world of college football. We finished off the season last night with Alabama winning the national championship. But what does that mean going forward? The work that's left to be done next on Chene and Golic Jr.
Chene and Golic Jr., the podcast.